Continuing on, at the bottom of page 14, Leonardo and Beatrice are still talking about marriage. And Beatrice, in her usual extreme fashion, makes a comparison of courtship, marriage, and married life, and she makes a comparison with three different types of dancing. At the bottom of page 14, you see a reference to the wooing, the wedding, and the repenting, and they are compared to a Scotch jig, a measure, and a syncopace. She compares the wooing to a Scotch jig. It's very hot and hasty, like a Scotch jig. It's very fast. The young man is very excited to woo the woman, win her heart, and impress her father, win her father's heart, get her hand in marriage. It's very fast, very exciting. The second part of the relationship, the wedding, Beatrice compares to a measure. This is a type of dance, a measure. It is very mannerly. It is modest. It's full of state and ancientry. This is the part of the relationship, the wedding, is the part of the relationship that is well planned and beautiful, stately. Everyone takes care that it's all just right. Then the third part of the relationship is after the wedding, and Beatrice calls this the repenting. The wooing, the wedding, and now the repenting. She compares this third part of the relationship to a syncopace. A syncopace is a type of dance that you get faster and faster as you go. So she compares this repenting to the syncopace and says that you get faster and faster and faster till you sink in your grave. In other words, once married life begins, there is so much going on, so much to do, you are just wearing yourself out and chasing after dreams that probably never come true. Now the revelers enter. Page 15. Don Pedro, Claudio, Benedict, Balthazar, Don John, Baraccio, Margaret, Ursula, others come in and they are all masked. You will see this as a repeated thing in Shakespeare plays to have a mask. It's an opportunity to have a party on the stage. This is what theater goers come for. They come to see beautiful costumes. They come to see beautiful dresses. They come to see young eligible women wooed by young handsome eligible men. This is part of theater going. They're looking for something fun and exciting. This is no different than a housewife today watching a soap opera because she wants to see how the rich people do it. She wants to see rich tableware and beautiful tablecloths, and she wants to see women who do nothing but eat food and have parties all day and yet stay very slender and wear the most beautiful gowns, and they're always pressed and ready, and the people have money, and the people have parties to go to every day. Today we have the image of a housewife who watches soap operas and becomes discontent with her life. For the Elizabethans, they went to the theater. If their life was plain and gray, they could go to the theater and they could watch these things on stage and have an imaginary, vicarious experience of what it would be like to be the daughter of Leonardo, the governor, or to be wooed by the prince, or to be wooed by the handsome, valiant young Claudio. Now, the party begins. Remember, even though you have the name of the person speaking the line, they are disguised and they do not know who is speaking to each other. Or perhaps in some cases they do. Don Pedro the prince looks to Hero and says, "Lady, will you walk about with your friend?" And Hero says, "So you walk softly and look sweetly and say nothing. I am yours for the walk, and especially when I walk away." Don Pedro says, "With me in your company? Would you leave me if I was with you?" And she's making a few cute little remarks. Yes, I would when I please. And we have some conversations going on between the prince and Hero. And he takes her aside and says, "Speak low. If you speak love," he draws her aside. And Balthazar then is speaking with Margaret. Now we have switched. You can imagine that as the prince and Hero sink to the back of the stage and are whispering, and we, the audience, can no longer hear them, Don Pedro is saying, do you love Claudio, would you marry him if he has your father's approval? Do you like him? And you can imagine that we see Don Pedro and Hero in the background visiting. And up forward on the stage now, where we can hear the lines, are Balthazar and Margaret. And now they're talking and flirting with one another. Continuing on, you can imagine, now they go to the background. I'm on page 16 in the Dover text. And we have Antonio and Ursula. They come forward. They have a few lines. The other guests, the other actors and actresses on the stage would go to the background. You can imagine we have music in the background. And we are listening to two more speak at this party. Then you'll see that now we've come to the lines for Beatrice and Benedict. So Antonio and Ursula are in the background. Balthazar and Margaret are in the background. And Don Pedro the Prince and Hero are in the background. The music would still be playing. They are still wearing their costumes. They are masked. And Beatrice and Benedict come to the forefront where the audience can hear them speaking. And we have interrupted them in the middle of their conversation. Beatrice says, "Will you not tell me who told you so?" Benedict, "No, you shall pardon me." And she says, "Nor will you tell me not who you are?" Beatrice is pretending that she does not know this is Benedict. So, what do you think she will do? This is her opportunity to say terrible things about Benedict. "Oh, don't you know him? Haven't you met him? He's such a bore. He's the prince's jester. He's a very dull fool. His only gift is in devising impossible slanders, of course, against her. None but libertines delight in him." She says awful things. She knows she is talking to Benedict, but he is disguised. Poor Benedict is reeling from the shock of her terrible paper bullets of the brain, reeling from this because he believes she is saying these things, not knowing that he is Benedict. And of course she does. Top of page 17, they're dancing. Everyone leaves except the bad guys, the evil Don John, Baraccio, and poor Claudio. Claudio is left behind. And Don John, of course, if he is looking to destroy the prince, and if he cannot destroy the prince, his brother, he's looking to destroy Claudio, what will he do? Of course, he's going to say to Claudio, "Isn't it wonderful that my brother the prince is looking to court Hero and marry her?" And what is the instant reaction of poor Claudio on the middle of page 17? Now the bad guys leave. Don John and Baraccio, they have sowed their seeds of hate. And Claudio stands alone. He has a soliloquy, the name in the middle of page 17. "Thus answer I in the name of Benedict. But hear these ill news with the ears of Claudio." And so Don John has pretended that he thought Claudio was Benedict. And they have sown their seeds well. What does Claudio now believe? You can tell by his soliloquy. Claudio now believes, "Oh my goodness, the prince did not court Hero to win her for me. The prince courted Hero to win her for himself." In comes Benedict at the bottom of page 17, Count Claudio. And of course, now Claudio is very depressed. He's very remorse. He cannot obviously fight a prince. If the prince truly wants Hero for a wife, Claudio will have to yield. The prince is also his friend. He will have to allow him to have Hero. And so, even when Benedict remarks at the bottom of page 17, "Well, why are you whining? The prince hath got your Hero." Claudio says very distantly, "I wish him joy of her." And Benedict immediately realizes what Claudio thinks and tells him, "Do you really think that the prince would do that to you? Would he really do that to you?" In comes the prince, middle of page 18, and says to Benedict, "Where's the count? Where's Count Claudio? Did you see him?" Benedict then reports to the prince, "Not only did I find him, he has misunderstood what you've done. He thinks that you have taken Hero for yourself." Now, at the top of page 19, Don Pedro is speaking to Benedict and tells Benedict, "Beatrice has a quarrel with him. The gentleman she danced with," which of course was Benedict, "told her she's much wronged by you." And poor Benedict replies, "Oh my goodness, she misused me past the endurance of a block." Because Beatrice really did say horrid things to Benedict, didn't she? He says she speaks poniards. These are daggers. Every word stabs. Beatrice could have made Hercules have turned spit. Yea, and have cleft his club to make the fire, too. Come, talk not of her. You shall find her the infernal Ate. Ate was the spirit of discord, the goddess of discord. Everywhere Ate went, she caused chaos. Benedict's classical allusion here is that Beatrice could have taken the Hercules, the mighty Hercules, who wore the skin of the Nemean lion, who carried the huge club, who accomplished the 12 labors. The mighty Hercules, she could have him with a little apron on, turning the spit with the chicken or the turkey on the spit, turning the roast, cooking it, and chop up his club to build the fire. Now, enter, at the bottom of page 19, re-enter Claudio, Beatrice, Hero, and Leonato. And Benedict, of course, does not want to be in the presence of Beatrice. So Benedict tells the prince, can't you send me on an errand? Can't you tell me to do something? Tell me to go to the Antipodes. Send me on an errand. Have me get a toothpick from far Asia. Have me measure John, Prester John's foot. Tell me to go to the Mongols and pull a hair from the beard of the great Cham. Don't you have something for me to do? Go to see the pygmies. Anything other than hold 3 words conference with this harpy. A harpy is a classical goddess, an awful thing. They also are called furies. A harpy has the body of a bird, the mouth and head of a woman, and they fly around and torment others. So to call poor Beatrice a harpy is to call her something pretty bad. And of course, Don Pedro thinks this is hilarious, and he says, no, I have no errands to send you on. I just want your good company. You must stay here. And so the prince forces Benedict to stay in the company of Lady Beatrice, and he does. Then we have a remark from Beatrice on page 20 that once before he won it of me with false dice. Beatrice is talking to the prince, Don Pedro, and this remark tells us that at one time she liked Signor Benedict. However, she loaned him her heart and he won it, but with false dice. He was untrue to her. So at some earlier point, Beatrice and Benedict liked one another, and she feels that he misused her trust and abused her heart, and that's why she has this wall put up, and that's why she's always flinging these paper bullets of the brain at him. Now, we have the incidents of Claudio and the prince cleared up on page 20, so that the prince says, don't worry, I got her for you. Do not worry about it. And Beatrice now is shocked that they're going to be married and says at the bottom of page 20, thus goes everyone to the world but I, and I'm sunburnt. I may sit in a corner and cry hey-ho for a husband. Don Pedro tells her at the top of page 21, Lady Beatrice, I will get you one. The prince offers to get Lady Beatrice a husband. And she makes a remark at the top of page 21, I would rather have one of your father's getting. Has your grace never a brother like you? Your father got excellent husbands if a maid could come by them. And so she's saying, if I had to have a husband, I would want one who was from your father. In other words, you are one of your brothers. This is the point where Don Pedro the prince can say to her, will you have me, lady? In other words, the prince is drawn to Beatrice. The prince likes her, and when Beatrice realizes this, she says, no, my lord, unless I might have another for working days. Your grace is too costly to wear every day. In other words, Beatrice likes the prince, but she would never marry someone who is so costly. She does not want to be a princess. She does not want to marry a prince, someone from that high of an estate, someone that high in the order of things. So we have a few more little retorts from the two of them, and they are looking at preparing for the wedding that they're now planning. Don Pedro looks off as Beatrice leaves and says, by my truth, a pleasant-spirited lady. Leonato says, yes, she's wonderful. However, she is sad, and my daughter says she hath often dreamed of unhappiness and waked herself with laughing, middle of page 21. Don Pedro the Prince, she cannot endure to hear tell of a husband. And Leonardo says, no, she mocks all her wooers out of their suit. She has no suitors. She mocks them all out of their suit. Don Pedro, out of the blue, says, she were an excellent wife for Benedick. And, of course, the friends all react, oh, my goodness, if they were married a week, they'd talk themselves mad. Don Pedro says to Claudio, when do you go to church? When will you marry Hero? Claudio, like many young men, very impetuous, says, tomorrow, my lord. Time goes on crutches till love have all his rights. Time goes too slow until love can be accomplished. And Leonato, Hero's father, says, no, not till Monday, my dear son. Don't worry, it's only a 7-night, and that's a brief time, too, to get everything ready and answered in my mind. So the prince says, you know what? We have a week. What shall we do for the next week while we wait for the wedding? Come, you shake the head, it's so long a breathing. He's telling Claudio, don't worry, my goodness, a week is not so long. What does the prince suggest they do during this week? But I warrant thee, Claudio, the time shall not go dully by us. I will in the interim undertake one of Hercules' labors, which is to bring Signor Benedick and the Lady Beatrice into a mountain of affection, the one with another. He has decided that Beatrice and Benedick would be wonderful to be married to one another, and they have a week to do it, and he believes he can accomplish it. So, they make their plot, they make their plan. If their plan succeeds, page 22, at the end of Don Pedro's section there at the top, if they are successful, he shall fall in love with Beatrice. If we can do this, Cupid is no longer an archer. His glory shall be ours, and we are the only love gods. They go off to decide how to make this happen. Scene 2. Now, in comes Don John and Baraccio. They discuss the news that Claudio is going to marry Hero in a week, and Baraccio says, oh, I can cross it. Baraccio tells Don John that he is in the favor of Margaret, who is Hero's gentlewoman. Margaret is Hero's friend, but she's also her gentlewoman. She prepares Hero's clothing. She picks up her room. She takes care of her. And Baraccio has become the boyfriend of Margaret, and he has found a way that he can ruin that wedding for his boss's sake, and poor Margaret will not understand what's going on. She will not realize that she has been part of this plot to undermine the marriage of Claudio and Hero. Don John's only care at the bottom of page 22 is, what life is in that to be the death of this marriage? What kind of news, what life is there in the news that I can use to ruin this marriage? And so Baraccio says, I can convince Margaret to dress up like Hero, to stand at Hero's balcony and to call at her chamber window and to call down to me, Claudio, Claudio, and I will call up to her, Hero. I can have her do that, and she will think it's a game. She'll think we're pretending to be like the rich people who are getting married in a week. I can get her to do that. And Don John wants to know, what good will this do? And of course, Baraccio says, well, if you can convince the prince and Claudio that they need to come and stand down below the balcony of Hero's window and listen, and if they hear Margaret and I playing our little game, Claudio will be convinced that Hero is not a true, virtuous young woman, the woman he believes her to be. And it'll be dark. There won't be much light. Claudio will think that it's Hero. Now scene 3 starts on page 24. And of course, as we continue here, we're in scene 3 in Leonardo's orchard. And now their plot, they're setting their trap. And so in comes Benedick and says, go bring me my book. The boy goes and gets it. And Benedick is walking around in the garden. Benedick is talking to himself. He has a soliloquy here, and he's walking around, and he's thinking about women. His good friend Claudio is going to marry, and so Benedick is thinking about women. And of course, for our sake, he says it out loud as a soliloquy, and he makes up the perfect woman. The perfect woman. She has to be fair. She has to be virtuous. She has to be wise. She has to be beautiful. She has to be of good discourse. She has to be of good speech, able to speak well. She should be an excellent musician. And at the bottom of page 24, her hair, and he decides, well, okay, God can choose her hair color. Then he sees his friends coming to the garden. He sees Don Pedro, the prince, Claudio, and Leonato. And he hides himself. He hides himself. He's going to listen in to what they're saying. Well, Don Pedro, the prince, Claudio, and Leonato, Hero's father, of course, know that Benedick is here. And so the things that they say now, you can imagine that they are saying very carefully to make sure Benedick overhears. Top of page 25. They have a musician playing. They're whispering, saying things like, do you see where Benedick hath hid himself? And then they continue. And now, Don Pedro, they talk about the little bit of a song. And the song continues, and moving on to page 26, Don Pedro says, come here, Leonato. Did you hear today, middle of page 26, that your niece Beatrice was in love with Senior Benedick? And of course, they're saying this very loud. This is going to shock Benedick, who's listening in, because of course, Beatrice treats him as though she hates his guts. So now, Benedick is listening even more carefully, and you can imagine Leonato is telling the prince what he hears from his daughter Hero, and they're going to speak as though Beatrice is madly in love with Benedick, but could never tell him how she feels because she knows Benedick would only scorn her. Now, imagine that they are exaggerating everything. For example, bottom of page 27, that when poor Beatrice has these awful dreams and she cannot tell him that she loves him because he would flout her, and Claudio says that the story they hear is, then down upon her knees she falls, weeps, sobs, beats her hair, tears her hair, prays, curses, oh sweet Benedick, God give me patience, because she can never tell Benedick that she loves him. And they continue on. When they leave, in the middle of page 29, they leave, they have set their trap. They go off to prepare for dinner, and they're going to leave Benedick alone. The last half of page 29 is Benedick's soliloquy, another soliloquy. They've gone off. They're going to send Beatrice to come fetch him for dinner and see if he thinks any differently about Beatrice. Now, bottom of page 29, Benedick, as you will see, now he sees Beatrice in a different light and thinks she's beautiful, virtuous, fair, has a few odd quirks and remnants of wit, and he has railed against marriage long. He'll have to live that down. That'll be hard, but he can do that. When he said he would die a bachelor, he really didn't think he would live to be married. And so he sees Beatrice. Bottom page 29, here comes Beatrice. By this day, she's a fair lady. I do spy some marks of love in her. Thinking that Beatrice loves him has changed his entire point of view. Top of page 30, in comes Beatrice, mad as usual. She cannot imagine why the prince and Leonato and Claudio have sent her to fetch Benedick for dinner, but she's come to do it. She must, and do it she will, but she'll snap at him as she does it. Everything that she says is vicious, and everything that she says, Benedick misinterprets to have an underlying meaning, thinking that everything she says really means that she loves him. So, as she leaves, he says, his last lines on page 30, ha! Against my will, I'm sent to bid you into dinner. There's a double meaning in that. Everything she says, he misinterprets. Much ado about nothing. Act 3, scene 1. Now we are in Leonardo's orchard, and we have Hero, Margaret, and Ursula. They're waiting for Beatrice to come. And when Beatrice comes, what are they doing? They are setting their trap. Little Cupid's crafty arrow that only wounds by hearsay. They're setting the trap. Page 32, in comes Beatrice, and they say, look where she comes, running like a lapwing. This is a bird that flies low to the ground. They see her. She's coming in to listen to them, and they pretend like they don't notice she's listening in. Of course, this is very funny on stage. So they jump into the middle of their conversation. You'll see in the middle of page 32, no, truly, Ursula, she's too disdainful. I know her spirits are as coy and wild as haggards of the rock. Ursula has the best line, But are you sure that Benedick loves Beatrice so entirely? And Hero says, yes, so says the prince and my new betrothed lord, which is Claudio. So now we have shocked Beatrice. They purposely allow Beatrice to overhear them talking about Benedick loving her. And what we see is that their trick works. Middle of page 34, Beatrice has her soliloquy and says, what fires in mine ears? Can this be true? Shall I stand condemned for pride and scorn so much? Contempt, farewell, and maiden pride, adieu. And she says she will. She will love Benedict. Love on, I will requite thee, which means I will respond to you, taming my wild heart to thy loving hand. They decide to love one another. And what is it based on? Both Benedick loving Beatrice and Beatrice loving Benedick are based on things they overheard, situations in which they were set up. Scene 2, a room in Leonardo's house. This is Act 3, Scene 2, a room in Leonardo's house. Enter Don Pedro the Prince, Claudio, Benedick, and Leonardo. And Don Pedro says, I'm only staying till your marriage is consummate, and then I'm going on to Aragon. Claudio says, I'll bring you hither, my lord, if you vouchsafe me. I'll take you there, my lord, if you ask me to. Don Pedro says at the top of page 35, no, I would never ask a new husband to come do that. It would be as great a soil in the new gloss of your marriage as to show a child his new coat and then tell him not to wear it. I won't have you take me. It would be to be a husband and then tell you you can't stay and be a husband for your wife. Benedict comes in, still top of page 35, gallants, I'm not as I have been. Leonardo looks at him and says, so say I, methinks you are sadder. Claudio, I hope he be in love. Now you can imagine, if Benedict believes he's in love now, what has he done? He has probably gone and primped and primed himself in front of a mirror. His hair will be combed. His buttons will be buttoned. His entire outfit will be more neat and tidy. And they are trying to decide what is wrong with Benedick. He says, I have the toothache. Don Pedro says, draw it, take it out. Benedick says, hang it. You must hang it first and draw it afterwards. What's eye for the toothache? What on earth is going on? What on earth is going on here? You have some good footnotes. This is an allusion to drawing and quartering, which was a terrible punishment for those who were accused of treason. And so this is a pun on that, what to do with this toothache. Claudio remarks at the bottom, page 35, if he be not in love with some woman, there's no believing odd signs. Brushes his hat in the mornings. What should that bode? The prince, has any man seen him at the barber's? Claudio, no, but the barber's man hath been seen with him, and the old ornament of his cheek hath already stuffed tennis balls. Tennis balls were stuffed with hair. The barber has been to see Benedick, and Benedict's old ornament of his cheek, his beard, has already stuffed tennis balls. And so, remember the remark earlier in the play that Beatrice made about a beard, not wanting to marry someone with a beard. And so the first thing Benedick did was he went and he shaved off his beard. Shaved off his beard. Apparently, from remarks made on the top of page 36, he's also, he smells nice now. He's gone and put some cologne on. And in comes Don John at the bottom of page 36. He's going to break up the merriment. And he says to his brother, my lord and brother, God save you. Don Pedro, good day, brother. Good day to you. And Don John says, I have something I need to speak to you. The prince says, well, in private. And John says, well, if it please you, yet Count Claudio may hear, for what I would speak concerns of him. What is Don John going to tell the prince and Claudio? Of course, he's going to say, top of page 37, he says, you might think I don't love you, brother, but you'll know better after from what I'm going to now manifest, what I'm going to tell you. And Don Pedro the Prince says, what's the matter? Don John says, I came to tell you the lady is disloyal. Claudio instantly, who, Hero? He's in shock. Don John, even she, Leonardo's hero, your hero, every man's hero. Claudio's still in shock. Disloyal? Don John says, yes, her word She is so bad, the words are too good to paint her wickedness. I can't tell you. In fact, I can't tell you. I better show you. You have to see her chamber window entered even the night before her wedding day. Then if you love her, tomorrow go ahead and marry her. But it would do better to your honor to change your mind. Claudio's still in shock. May this be so. The prince is in shock. I will not think it. Now, we as the audience realize that no one should be listening to anything Don John says. He's just been defeated in the war. He hates his brother. He's known to be a fink, a terrible person. And here they are believing his slander against the Lady Hero beyond all evidence, beyond all evidence. And Claudio instantly says, if I see anything tonight, why I should not marry her tomorrow, in the congregation where I should wed, there will I shame her. And that is exactly what Claudio is going to do. Scene 3, out in the street. This is page 38. We have Dogberry and Verges with the watch. These are the three stooges of Shakespeare. Dogberry is incredible. He is the watchman. These next few pages are filled with malapropisms. Dogberry is trying to impress his men with his vocabulary, and he is continually using the wrong words. Pay attention. He is continually using the wrong words. These men will be the only men who will note anything honestly and understand what's going on. So if these few pages do seem to be a little bit confusing, they're meant to be. If you read them over several times, they will get funnier. They'll get funnier as you go. Now, while the watch are standing around entertaining us, middle of page 40, in the dark, the evil Baraccio and Conrad. Here they are in the dark. The watchman goes and hides somewhere and listens in to see what these men are talking about. And Conrad and Baraccio are admitting to one another all the awful things that have happened. And so when you see, middle of page 40, Baraccio, what, Conrad? And the watch says, oh, shh, peace, be quiet, stir not. Baraccio says, Conrad, I say. Conrad replies, here, man, I'm at thy elbow. And we find out that Baraccio has something to confess to Conrad. And he says that he tells us what he has done. What has he done? What has Baraccio and Conrad, what have they done? Baraccio says, middle of page 41, not so neither, but know that I have tonight wooed Margaret, the Lady Hero's gentlewoman, by the name of Hero. She leans me out at her mistress's chamber window, bids me 1,000 times good night. I tell this tale vilely. I should first tell thee how the prince Claudio and my master planted and placed and possessed by my master Don John saw afar off in the orchard this amiable encounter. So, Don John has taken the prince and Claudio to view this farce. And Baraccio cannot contain himself. He has to tell Conrad that he's made a lot of money doing this, and wait till you see what happens at the wedding tomorrow. Now, we do still have time to stop this, but we won't be able to, because this is a comedy, and we have to have a crisis. We have to have a climax for the play so that we can have some resolution and fix it all up at the end. And now we have, in the middle of page 42, scene 4 back at Hero's apartment. And the ladies are preparing for the wedding. Margaret will make some remarks to Hero as she prepares for the wedding, what it might be like to be a wife. In comes Beatrice, middle of page 43, tells her good morning. And now, of course, Margaret and Hero are going to make fun of Beatrice because she also is in love. And so they're going to make fun of her, that she is now in love, and tease her. Then, scene 5, page 45, in comes Leonato, Dogberry and Verges, and the watch, who now know what the plot is, and now it is the morning of the wedding, page 45, act 3, scene 5, it is the morning of the wedding. Dogberry and Verges come to Leonato. They try to explain to him what they have discovered during the night. However, they use so many malapropisms, they make so many mistakes, and Leonato is preparing for his daughter's wedding this morning. He finally has to tell them, neighbors, you are tedious. And he has to say, I'm so sorry, I can't listen to you. You go take care of it yourself. And they leave. Leonardo has missed the opportunity to find out that a plot is afoot, that his daughter was slandered during the night, and that the wedding, he is on his way to the wedding, and that this wedding is doomed to ruin. He just missed his opportunity. In this play, Much Ado About Nothing, who has discovered the plot? The Three Stooges-style watchman. Page 47 in the Dover, Act 4. Now we are at the church. In comes everyone. And this, too, is what Elizabethans have come to see. They've come to see the bridal gown and the flowers and the wedding. In comes Don Pedro the Prince, his evil brother Don John, Leonardo Hero's father to give her away, the friar who will pronounce the ceremony, Claudio Benedict. You can imagine those, the Prince Claudio, who believe that Hero now is not virtuous. They come in with very serious faces, inappropriate for a wedding. And Hero and her father and Beatrice, her cousin, come in with joy and expectation. What a wonderful wedding this will be. Realize that Benedict was left out of that plot. Benedict was not invited to go and see the lady Hero slandered by Margaret and Baraccio. And so Benedict comes in innocent. This is important for the plot. The plot of the wedding itself, it is very easy for you to see that when the friar says, "Who do you take this woman?" and Claudio says no, the audience and the friar and Leonardo, to begin with, assume that there is some misunderstanding. Of course, Claudio doesn't understand. And then Claudio ruins Hero by throwing her back to her father as a rotten orange. You can imagine on the stage the scene where the wedding is ruined and the poor bride is in a heap of tears, faints from, she sinks down, she swoons. Her father, rather than saying, "This cannot be true, this is my virtuous daughter," says, "Oh, in the middle of page 50, hath no man's dagger here a point for me." He wishes to die. Hero has no one supporting her, and so she swoons, she faints, and the prince, Don John, and Claudio all leave the wedding. Benedict, it's very important, Benedict stays. Benedict says, "Oh my goodness, how doth the lady? Beatrice is so upset, dead I think. Help, uncle." Hero, "Why, Hero, uncle, Signor Benedict, friar." Leonardo is asking fate to take away the heavy hand. Leonardo just wants to die. Notice that Leonardo, it doesn't even occur to him to say, "How dare you slander my daughter?" He accepts it, of course, because the title of this play is Much Ado About Nothing. Poor Leonardo cannot imagine any other earthly thing crying shame on her and says, "You may as well die, you tainted, foul-tainted flesh," middle of page 51. And the friar is going to stand up for Hero. Benedict stands up for Hero, and Beatrice stands up for Hero. Leonardo is just so upset that he says a little child could lead him. He is so upset. So the friar is going to come up with a plan. And the friar says, "Let's hide her away. They all saw her faint. Let's pretend that she died from the shame. Because to begin with, if she's dead, the prince and Claudia will think more highly of her. They won't think so poorly of her. And it will give us a chance to find out what has really happened." And top of page 54, Leonardo says, "Being that I flow in grief, the smallest twine may lead me." And the friar agrees, "'Tis well consented, presently away. For to strange sores, strangely, they strain the cure. Come, lady, die to live. This wedding day perhaps is but prolonged. Have patience and endure." And they lead off poor Hero to hide her somewhere and pretend that she is dead while they try to figure out what's happened. Everyone leaves the stage except Benedict and Beatrice. This is the first time they are now alone. They each believe that the other has admitted that they love one another. And so this is their chance to find out, is it true? However, notice they're both still on their guard. "Lady Beatrice, have you wept all this while?" Middle of page 54. "Yea, and I will weep a while longer." Now, they have their confessions, and they're protesting confessions. What fun. Benedict is going to say, what can I do to pray? What can I do to show you that I love you?" And Beatrice will say, "Well, he's the height of a villain," middle of page 55, "who has done this, who has slandered, scorned, and dishonored my kinswoman." "Who is this?" "Claudio." Claudio has slandered Hero publicly. And Beatrice says, "Oh, that I were a man." Middle of page 55. If she were a man, what would she do? She would eat his heart in the marketplace. And so she will tell Benedick, "If you love me, prove it. Go to Claudio, who has slandered my kinswoman, my cousin Hero, and challenge him to a duel." He has to recant that, or a duel. Benedick at first thinks he cannot do this, and finally he agrees. And he says at the top of page 56, "I am engaged. I will challenge him. I will kiss your hand and so leave you." And so she goes. Scene 2, Act 4. Act 4 now. We have entered Act 4. Please forgive me for not mentioning that. Now we're in Scene 2. In our Dover edition, we're on page 56. And in come Dogberry, Verges, and Saxton. And, of course, they have arrested Conrad and Baraccio. And now, as they examine their prisoners, we'll find out that the constable, or the sexton who is taking down the testimony and writing it down, tells them how to do it. Well, first, middle of page 57, you must call forth the watch that are their accusers. So they call forth the watch. They tell what they have heard. They get all of the confessions. Bottom of 57, the sexton says, "What else?" And the watch says, "This is all." And the sexton, top of page 58, says, "And this is more, masters, than you can deny. Prince John is this morning secretly stolen away. Hero was in this manner accused, in this very manner refused, and upon the grief of this, suddenly died. Master Constable, let these men be bound and brought to Leonardo's. I will go before and show him their examination." And he leaves. And of course, we have the final closing statements of Dogberry and Verges. Poor Dogberry cannot write down. He wants to make sure that the sexton will write down the bad things that Conrad and Baraccio called him. Act 5, our last act. Scene 1, we're in front of Leonardo's house. Antonio and Leonardo, the two brothers, are discussing with themselves how awful this is, this terrible thing that has happened. Leonardo only has one child. He wishes he had died rather than have one child. And as they are discussing how awful this thing is that has happened to them, in the middle of page 60, here comes Don Pedro the Prince and Claudio as they walk by. And instantly, as Don Pedro and Claudio attempt to just walk by, Leonardo and Antonio stop them and want to discuss this, want to find out why all of this happened and how awful it is. And Claudio says to I do not want to give your age such cause of fear. Leonardo says, "Tush, tush, man, never fleer and jest at me." Leonardo is very serious, talking to this young man who wanted to marry his daughter. "I speak not like a dotard nor a fool," top of page 61, "as under privilege of age to brag what I've done being young or and what would do were I not old. No, Claudio, to thy head, thou hast so wronged mine innocent child and me that I'm forced to lay my reverence by and with gray hairs and bruise of many days do challenge thee to the trial of a man." And so Leonardo is challenging Claudio to a duel. Claudio is going to look at it almost as though it's a joke. He will not perform a duel with this older man, with Leonardo. He simply will not do it. And Antonio, it ends up Antonio also wants to challenge them. Let him kill me first. Let me fight him first, brother Leonardo, and then let him kill you. And the prince and Claudio get away after finding out that Hero is dead. Now, as we come upon Benedick, middle of page 62, Leonardo and Antonio leave. The prince is standing there. They're just recovering from this encounter with Antonio and with Leonardo, Hero's father, and in comes Benedick. They expect that Benedick is coming in as their friend. Benedick is really coming in to challenge Claudio to a duel, which he does. At first they believe he's jesting, then they accept it, and they realize he is challenging Claudio to a duel. And in the middle of page 64, Don Pedro, now that Benedick leaves, says, "He hath challenged thee." And Claudio says very seriously, "Most sincerely." And now this is what's happening. Now, as we continue on, what happens? Middle of page 65. Borachio is brought before the prince. The prince looks at him and says, "What have you offended, masters, that you are thus bound to your answer? This learned constable is too cunning to be understood. What's your offense?" And Borachio replies, "Sweet prince, let me go no further to mine answer." Borachio is ashamed of what he has done, especially since it has caused the death of Hero. "Do you hear me, and let this count kill me? I have deceived even your very eyes. What your wisdoms could not discover, these shallow fools have brought to light, who in the night overheard me confessing to this man, to Conrad, how Don John your brother, evil Don John your brother, incensed me to slander the Lady Hero, how you were brought into the orchard and saw me court Margaret, in Hero's garments, how you disgraced her when you should marry her. My villainy they have upon record, which I had rather seal with my death than repeat over to my shame. The lady is dead upon mine and my master's false accusation, and briefly, I desire nothing but the reward of a villain." Borachio is repentant, he feels awful, and here we have Claudio and the prince with the realization of what they have done, what they have caused. And of course, they're incredibly remorse. Middle of page 65, Don Pedro's line, "Runs not this speech like iron through your blood?" And Claudio replies, "I have drunk poison while he uttered it." And of course, they should have suspected the evil Don John. They did not. Now he has already fled. Looking to page 66. Looking to page 66. Claudio is only looking for how can he make this up to Leonardo. He has caused the death of Leonardo's daughter. Leonardo sees fit at this time to allow Claudio and the prince to believe his daughter is dead, even though they have discovered that those were slanders that were set against her. And so what does Leonardo decide? Leonardo, as any father, wants to make sure that Claudio is going to marry his daughter. And so Leonardo says to Claudio at the bottom of page 66, "I cannot bid you bid my daughter live. That were impossible. But I pray you both, possess the people in Messina here. Tell the people how innocent she died. Fix her reputation. And if your love can labor aught in sad invention, hang her an epitaph upon her tomb and sing it to her bones. Sing it tonight. Tomorrow morning come you to my house, and since you could not be my son-in-law, be yet my nephew. My brother hath a daughter." And of course they're making up a lie. "My brother hath a daughter, almost the copy of my child that's dead. She looks just like Hero, and I want you to marry her." And Claudio says, "Okay, I'll go make up an epitaph, I'll sing it at her grave tonight, and in the morning I'll come and I'll marry your niece. I'll marry this look-alike." And now, scene 2, page 68, now Dover edition, we're back to Leonardo's garden, and in come Margaret and Benedick. They're meeting again. Now it is a happier occasion because Hero's slander has been repaired. The audience still believes, or part of the players still believe, that Hero is dead, but we are about to have the resolution, complete resolution from our conflict. And Benedick now feels that it's time to tell Margaret how much he loves her. And continuing on, let's see, in comes Beatrice, page 69. In comes Beatrice. "Sweet Beatrice, would you come when I call you?" This is Benedick speaking to her. Beatrice, "Yea, Signor, and depart when you bid me." They are more serious now, and they have their first serious discussion. Page 70 in our Dover edition, we are now in Act 5, Scene 3, and we are at the church. In comes the prince and Claudio, and they are at the church, and Claudio is going to read the scroll to repair the damage to Hero's reputation, and he even has to sing. Remember, he's written a song, so he's going to sing his song, and that finishes that scene. Scene 4, Act 5, now we are at a room in Leonardo's house, and in come Leonardo, his brother Antonio, Benedick and Beatrice, Margaret, Ursula, Friar Francis, and Hero. And the friar says, "Didn't I tell you she was innocent?" And Leonardo, "So are the prince and Claudio, who accused her upon the error that you heard debated. But Margaret was in some fault for this. although against her will, as it appears, in the true course of all question. Now they have discovered that Margaret had a part in this, but she did not know it. So they've already forgiven Margaret, and now they are going to come hither masked. So the ladies leave, and we are preparing for the wedding. Now it has come to the promised hour, and the friar, Benedict, and Antonio, and Leonardo make their plan for the wedding. And here comes the prince and Claudio. Page 73, here comes Don Pedro and Claudio and two or three others. Don Pedro the prince, good morrow to this fair assembly. They've come to the wedding. They want to do their penance by having Claudio marry this niece who looks like Hero. It's a wedding, and yet it's a wedding without joy yet. So Don Pedro says, good morrow to this fair assembly. Leonardo replies, good morrow, prince. Good morrow, Claudio. We here attend you. Are you yet determined today to marry with my brother's daughter? And Claudio says, I'll hold my mind. Were she an Ethiop, she could be from deepest, darkest Africa, and I will marry her. And so Antonio exits, and he brings back the young ladies. Antonio, Leonardo's brother, comes with masked ladies. Claudio looks up, bottom of page 73, and says, which is the lady I must seize upon? Which is the lady I will marry? And Antonio, pretending as though this young woman is his daughter now, says, this same is she, and I do give her you. Claudio, why then, she's mine. Sweet, let me see your face. Leonardo, and know that you shall not till you take her hand before this friar and swear to marry her. Leonardo is going to make certain that they do get married this time. And so Claudio agrees, and the bottom of page 73, give me your hand before this holy friar. I am your husband, if you like of me. And Hero unmasks herself and says her beautiful lines, and when I lived, I was your other wife. She unmasks herself, lifts up her bridal veil, and now Claudio and the prince realize she was alive. They're standing before the friar. They are all happy now. We have some beautiful lines. And someone will suggest, Benedict says, come, middle of page 75, we're friends, let's have a dance before we get married, ere we are married, to lighten our own hearts and our wives' heels. They're going to have a double wedding ceremony. And Leonardo, as a typical father, says, we'll have dancing afterward. Leonardo is going to make certain that the knot is tied and that they married Mary, and we have complete resolution, even to the point that Benedict will devise brave punishments for Don John, who, of course, has been captured and is even now being brought back to Messina for punishment. Thank you for more than an hour of your time, and I hope that you are able to enjoy this play. If you're not laughing, my apologies. The Lord bless you.